sir. Hi, everybody. I'm Dave, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Dave.
And grateful to be here, and thank Grant for asking me. I was taught never to say no in AA when somebody asked me to do service. And so I didn't say no. It's instinct now. Somebody asked, yes. I don't even really think about it, you know. And I guess I'll just keep it simple. I'm going to share what it was like, what happened, and what it's like today. I come from a regular family, regular middle class family. Nothing that really stands out as far as a bad childhood. I had everything I needed, plus a little more, I would say. You know, all the basics and some extras even. Everything was normal except for the fact that that I didn't feel normal. That was the only thing. You know, I when I look back on my childhood, I see there was always feelings of feeling different, feeling alone in a crowd. And I really relate to those feelings more today than I did when I first came around, actually, because I'm starting to not feel that way for the first time in my life. I'm starting to feel comfortable in crowds and comfortable with myself and starting to feel good, you know. And that's I noticed the difference from that today because of how I feel today. You know, I was just always used to feeling weird and, you know, and very into myself and very awkward. I was just so used to that that's just the way I thought I was that way. You know, I thought that's just, I would be like that for the rest of my life. And so I'll get right into another thing I like to say. I've shared a few times, and I talked to my sponsor about this, you know, if anybody's new and they don't get anything from my message, I would strongly recommend going to more meetings. Because when I first came around, I was in rehab, and I was forced to go to meetings. You know, pretty much forced. I mean, I didn't have to. I had to if I wanted to stay in rehab. But I was basically forced. And, you know, I don't know if I would have stuck around had I not been taken to meeting after meeting after meeting the first 3 months. You know, because I did not relate. I didn't feel comfortable. I didn't think it was for me when I first came into the rooms. And from coming back over and over again, it got to me, you know. I heard my story. I eventually heard my story, and, you know, and met some people, and now it's my home. So I like to start off by saying that I would urge anybody to definitely check out more meetings, you know. And I started drinking when I was probably 12 years old. That was probably the first time I would sip the foam off my grandfather's beer when I was a kid. I would pour the beers and do all that, and it didn't really do much for me. I really had to work to be an alcoholic because I did not like alcohol. I hated alcohol, actually. It was disgusting, you know, and I would force myself. When I was 12, me and my buddies got together. We had a couple of beers in the park or the woods or whatever. But I could never drink enough. I didn't drink enough to get drunk, and because I couldn't stomach it. But I guess my first real drunk was when I was 14, and it was a Mickey of Southern Comfort, and I'll never forget that. And it was nice and sweet, and I could stomach it, and I drank that in about 10 minutes. My first drunk was a blackout. It was throwing up, blackout, and that was my first experience with really drinking to get away from myself, I guess. And my drinking was like that pretty much from the beginning. And like I said, I had to work hard to become an alcoholic because I did not like, I'll say it again, I did not like alcohol. And I would drink wine coolers and anything that went down really easy. Beer too, but I would do the pinch the nose thing so I couldn't taste it, and I would drink it as fast as I could. And And I went to any lengths to get away from being myself, you know. What can I say? I'm here to share about my experiences with alcohol. I have other substances in my story, but I'll try to stay mostly to alcohol. You know, I liked what alcohol did for me. That's why I did it, even though I hated it, you know. And it made me be able to talk. It made me be able to dance, to talk to girls, to talk to guys even, because I felt, you know, I was very shy and whatnot. And that was kind of how I tried to identify myself at a younger age, was as one of these people, you know. I wanted to be one of the cool guys, you know, because I didn't fit in anywhere. So I fit in with the people who like to get wasted. That's who I fit in with, because we were all kind of looking for something, you know. We were all kind of, you know, I don't know what we were doing, you know. We just spent a lot of time in parks and in arcades and wandering the streets and getting into trouble and, you know. I found myself getting into a lot of trouble as a teenager, you know, and getting arrested a few times. And like I say, I had everything I needed, you know, but I was just, whatever was out there, I felt like I had to experience it, you know. And especially if somebody said, don't do that, or that's not good, then I definitely had to do it. I had to, you know, as it, like, almost a test to myself. That kind of behavior got me into trouble. It led me to all kinds of places that I didn't end up wanting to be. And so it progressed for me from there to drinking in bars. You know, it started off in the parks, and that was, like, we just. And I look at the difference between myself and other people, especially through my friends, as the years went on. You know, the certain people from the age of like 14 to like probably 21, they started dropping off, you know, and there was only the few of us left that were doing these things, that were out on a Tuesday night at 8 o'clock in some bar where, no, you know, it was dead, but it was a dollar a beer, you know what I mean? Or it was that drink specials, you know, all you can drink from 8 until 10 for 10 bucks, you know, and me and a few of my buddies, we would be at these places on a Tuesday night, you know, and we're drinking like 16 drinks in 2 hours on a Tuesday night, trying to get as loaded as we can to do nothing, you know, just to get wasted. That was what we were there for, you know. While I saw other friends moving on to school and to getting lives, and I guess I crossed the line. I guess I crossed the invisible line. I don't know exactly when it was, but I crossed it. And in my mind, I was living life, you know. I was experiencing things, and I was a rebel. And I heard an expression once. I think it was the hippie expression: if you don't rebel by 18, you have no balls, and if you don't conform by 30, you have no brains. And I'm kind of following that to a T, actually, because I started trying to get sober at 30. I'm 32 now, and so, you know, these little credos were, boy, you know, that's what I live for, you know. I did things for other people. I didn't do them for me. I didn't do what was right for me, you know. I was concerned with how I looked, or, you know, I wasn't looking out for me, you know. I wasn't looking out for the people that cared for me, you know. I cared more about the outside world than I did about my family, about myself, about any of that, about the people that you know, that are still with, that cared about me, that still care about me today, you know. And you know, my problems with alcohol involved not paying my rent, not paying my bills, losing jobs, losing girlfriends, fighting with friends, fighting with girlfriends, I was the type of guy with alcohol was me, is I'd start off after payday, and I would go out for a few drinks, and I had all my week's expenses planned out, and by 10 o'clock I was drunk, and then it was just like, whatever. All of a sudden, all my responsibilities were gone. And by 4 in the morning, I probably didn't have enough money to eat the next day. I lived that scenario for 10 years. That's how I lived, And I'll worry about it tomorrow. And I always had money to get drunk, and I always had money to do other things. But I never had money to take care of my responsibilities. And the age of 25, I was working in a bar, and it was about at that age for me anyway that I'd crossed that invisible line of I'd crossed it long before, but about at that age I started thinking to myself, you got to try to smarten up a bit, And that's when I realized I had the problem, really. At 25, I realized it then, because I could not slow down, I could not stop, And I never say quit, never say die. I would not surrender, I would not admit, I would not ask for help. I would, and I tried everything in the book. At the age of 20, I moved from here to Vancouver, and I did that to get out of a bunch of jackpots I was in here. There is drugs in my story, and my problems with alcohol, related to alcohol, involved using drugs, And I had a debate with my sponsor once in a while about that, because he's very stick to alcohol, and I respect that, And he said AA meetings are is where we relate our experience and our troubles with alcohol, and I agree with that. But I was introduced to certain drugs while drinking alcohol in the bars. Had I not been in those places, I would not have been doing those things. And so I got into I had a Bermuda Triangle thing, with pot, alcohol, and cocaine. Started with the one, then I went to the alcohol, and then it was all bets were off. When I drank alcohol, that's what alcohol did for me. My inhibitions were gone, and then I didn't know what was going to happen. I didn't know where I would end up. I ended up doing things with people in places I never thought I would ever do, and I did them over and over and over again. And to sum it up, really, I was just a slave. I was a slave to alcohol and substances from the age of 18 till I was 30. And I tried everything possible to stop, other than actually asking for help or seeking counsel from people who had the same problem, And I relate to Bill's story. It's not my story, but I relate to the all the different ways he tried and trying, different ways to stop. And I relate to a lot of us in the rooms. I mean, it's not an original story. I got a different girlfriend. I got a girlfriend who didn't drink. Or I moved to a different neighborhood where I didn't know the same people. I got different jobs. I changed cities. I thought that was the ultimate one for sure. If I move to a different city, it's going to be different. I heard that called a geographical cure when I came into these rooms. So all these light bulbs went off when I came into the rooms. I was like, wow. You did that too. You tried that too. So I moved to Vancouver to try to change my life at 20. I moved back at 27. 10 times more screwed up than I was when I left. And I left Vancouver to try to straighten my life out again, to move back here. And like I heard said in this room, these rooms, everywhere I went, I brought me with me. And that was the problem. In August of 2003, I turned 30. And it was on my birthday, and I remember saying, in 2 weeks, if my life is not radically different. This is, it's in such denial, I'm going to have to ask for some help. And 2 weeks later, sure enough, as soon as I set the 2 week mark, I set myself on a roller coaster ride of hell. And ended up, my last drink before I got into recovery. And I ended up in a motel room on St. Jacques Street, and beer bottles all around me, and baggies and other paraphernalia, and I'd been in there for a couple days, and I'd lost my job, you know, another job, and my girlfriend had left me a few months before that, and I was just sitting on the bed, and it was Monday morning, and it was the Raphael, so it's right by the highway there, and the rush hour traffic was going by, and you know, the sun was up, and here I am again in this situation, you know, and I just, something snapped in me there, and I just saw blackness, you know. I really saw like blackness. I heard a speaker last night who said there, at the end there was no blue skies, there was no gray skies, there was only black skies, and that's how I felt at the end, and I had nowhere to turn to anymore, you know. I looked around my life, and the relationship with my family was non-existent. I didn't see most of them. Hadn't seen a lot of them in 10 years. I saw my parents because I had, you know, that like, I had to go beg money and food and everything else off them, because through the years, that, you know, as much as I resented them, and of course they're the reason for all my problems, you know, at the time, that's what I thought. And you know, and I had to get whatever I could out of them to keep going. But the rest of the family that I didn't need for something, I just didn't see. You know, I was ashamed. And I was full of resentment. I resented the whole world. Literally. Society, my family, all my friends I used to have, girlfriends, employers, government, police, countries, everything. I just resented the whole world, you know, and I guess I had to feel that way, because if I had looked at myself, I would have killed myself, I'm sure of it, after all the years of wreckage, you know, of just wreckage. And so I called a rehab, and I checked into rehab, and a funny thing. An amazing thing happened there, actually. They told me, I didn't know anything about AA, or I'm also involved in another fellowship. I do two 12-step fellowships, and they took us to two of those. They took us to AA meetings and to CA meetings also. And there was an AA meeting that was brought to the treatment house. And they said a certain person, I won't say his name because I used to always say his name and break his anonymity, but I'm going to stop doing that, even though he likes it when I do it. So and so brings an AA meeting to the rehab, and I knew somebody with that name. You know, I only known ever one person with that name, actually. And I went, it can't be, because this is somebody who I used to back many years ago when I was like 20 or 19. I knew him. And I used to buy certain things off him. And anyways, I won't go too much into detail about that. But he's somebody I knew to be in that life. Let's put it that way. And I said, no, I can't be. And sure enough, Wednesday came around, Thursday I think it was, came around. And this person came through the door, and he was sponsoring the AA meeting at my rehab. And it was, he became my first sponsor. And you know, it was an amazing coincidence, and it was one of those coincidences that happens a lot in the program. I find in the past 2.5 years that I've been around, I've had a lot of those funny coincidences that happen. You know, that are just like, they're signs for me. They're signs anyway. And the first year and a half for me was very experimental. Let's put it that way. You know, I knew I had a problem, but there was still a part of me that thought I could fix it my way, big time. I thought I'd fix it my way, you know. I got lots of suggestions, and I followed a few of them. I followed the ones that I liked, you know. And I had a sponsor. I didn't really call him very much, you know. I did a lot of meetings. I did do a lot of meetings. What I did the first year and a half, I did a lot of meetings and I did a lot of service. And, you know, when I first came in, I couldn't get over myself. And I'm not saying I'm totally away from that now. I'm not. But, I mean, I was so withdrawn. I did not want anybody to know me. You know, I didn't, I was afraid to let people in. And I was afraid. I didn't know who I was, and I was afraid, you know. And I was very quiet and very withdrawn, and so I wouldn't I wouldn't open up, and I just kind of kept to myself, and I did my own thing, and I got into a relationship that was suggested I didn't get into in my first year, and that worked out like most people said it would, not very good, and. And I did the steps. I did a step workshop during that year and a half. But I did what I call the drive-through version of the steps. You know, I just kind of did the ones I liked, and the ones I didn't do. You know, so my program consisted of very little prayer, if any, no amends. You know, no amends, and I'm half honesty. You know, I'm being half honest. So I got the results. You know, I didn't stay sober, and I didn't have a higher power, and I didn't believe that something greater than myself could restore me to sanity, and I believed that I could restore me to sanity. You know, and it never worked before, and through many slips, and banging my head against the wall. I went to my sponsor at the time a little over a year ago, and I said, I'm ready. You know, I said, I'm willing to do whatever it takes. And those were the words, you know, those words don't mean a lot, but that's what I said. I said, and I was serious, I meant business. I said, whatever you tell me to do, I'm going to do it. You have 4 years sobriety. You're happy. You were like I was, maybe worse, you know. I related to the man a lot. We had a lot in common, and I said, I'm ready. You know, I'm ready to do it. And then I started. And so the past year and almost, I guess it's a month now. It's a year. It's a 13 months probably to the day. And I just got very, very, very active, and the past year has been great. You know. My life for this past year, and I don't make any bones about it, that's changing now, but I made sobriety my life for this past year. And I called my sponsor every day, if not every day, very, very often, sometimes more than once a day. I joined a couple of groups. Like I say, I'm active in two fellowships. I did a lot of service. I was doing helping out with a youth detention meeting anyways, it's out east. So I was very, very active, and I got involved in step workshops. I did men's intensive weekends. I went to Soberfest. I don't know if any of you know what that is, but I just started getting out of myself, you know, and really through all the step work is where the difference is coming, I'm noticing, because today I have a faith that I didn't have before, you know, and my second step, you know, my first step is basically what I just told all you guys before getting into recovery. That's pretty much my first step in my mind, you know, through all different ways I tried to stop, I couldn't, you know. Through trying to fix myself, I couldn't. And as soon as I put alcohol in my system, I don't know what's going to happen. And I don't know how to not put it in my system by myself without the help of the program, God, sponsorship, friends, meeting, service. And that's my first step. And my second step is because I had a problem with the God thing, with the faith thing. And my second step was through the year and a half of slipping and seeing people that came in at the same time as I was and people who were there with X amount of sobriety since I came in, still sober, You know what I mean? And their lives improving. That was my... I came to believe that if I did what you people did, that I could recover too. You know? And that's my... That was my second step at the beginning. And so I threw myself, like I said, I threw myself into step groups, service, just at all, home groups, men's intensive weekends. When I felt uncomfortable and awkward, I used to pray while going to meetings to just, God, you know, whatever's out there, help me to just try to be myself, you know. Help me to get over this anxiety of being staying in my shell, because if I stay in my shell, you know, I'm not going to stay sober. If I don't start getting out there, I'm not going to stay sober. And that was my second step, and that's changing as time goes on, you know. And my third step was basically that also. My third step was turning my will over to the program. And I talked to a lot of older members and through hearing speakers and speaker tapes and whatnot. You know, that's a very common thing from what I've heard with people who've had problem with the faith thing, is to put is to make the program your higher power. And so that's how it began with me. And that's changing now, because now I've got the year, that mark that I wanted for this all this time. You know, I got my year, and I put my life into my recovery, and I got my year. But that's just the thing. I didn't have much of a life other than my recovery, you know, other than the program. And I'm starting to see that now, you know. And I have a lot of fears and anxieties of the future, and when I'm not living in, when I'm not staying in my day or my moment, which, you know, is like very, very hard for me to do. You know, this is an art in itself, I think. But you know, I have a lot of fears, and I have a lot of anxiety, and I have a lot of issues. You know, I'm addressing my alcohol problem. And that's giving me a little bit of breathing room to start to see, like, what the real problem was, you know, and that's myself, you know, and that's my character defects. So my faith, you know, I'm developing a little bit, trying to develop more faith today, you know, that if I stay on this path, you know, that my life will get better, that I will, the promises will come true, and that I'll have what I see the people that have come before me, what they have, you know. So that the fellowship can only take me, the program as my higher power has taken me as far as it needs to, you know. And now I'm seeing that I do have some kind of a faith, you know. Because I'm just doing it. Today I'm doing it, you know. I'm just throwing myself into life and you know, and I'm not bitter and angry and resentful like I used to be. You know, like I got a job now. It starts at 4 a.m. It's in a warehouse, and before this would have been, you know, I would have been like, oh, woe is me. You know, look at the shit that I have to go through. You know what I mean? No. And today that my faith is carrying me through that, because I know I'm on a path. I was working a job for a couple of years. It was under the table, construction job, chaos, no stability, you know. And that's all I knew was in recovery was this job. And so I'm starting fresh, you know. And I got a real job where I pay taxes. And I know it's not a moral issue, the cash job. You know, it's not a moral issue for me. It's more of a stability issue of a being part of society issue for me, you know, being stable. And every morning I wake up, it's only been a week that I've taken on this new shift, but every morning at 3:15 and I sit in my car and I read my reflections and my daily meditation and I say a prayer, you know, I say a couple prayers you know, just basically help me to be useful today, you know what I mean? Help me to remember, you know. Help me ask for guidance and strength to stay on the path, you know. And I have a belief, you know. I feel the belief today because I'm able to be different than I was, you know. I'm able to be somewhat happy, you know. And the next phase of my of my recovery that I'm working on with my sponsor is putting the program into my life now. You know, is starting to carry that to my family, in all my affairs. You know, because I find myself very helpful and generous and understanding with members. You know, and I don't find it's always that way with my family. You know, that I can be moody to them, and I can be, you know, I can be a real jerk to them, to be honest with you. You know, but yet I'm willing to go drive out of my way to pick newcomers up, to bring them to meetings, to, you know, buy them coffee and do this and help them move, and, you know, where, you know, and, you know, I stayed sober, and there's something to that, but I need to start bringing it to the rest of my affairs, you know. And so I guess with that, I'll end off, and I will wish you all a very good 24. Thank you.